to chapter 6, verse 14. And God says to Noah, he says, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood, and you should make compartments in the ark, and you should tar it inside and outside with the pitch. Okay? Okay, so the first thing he says, Rashi says, make for yourselves an ark. So Rashi says, there's much relief in salvation before God. Right? In other words, many ways God could bring salvation. Why then did God trouble Noah with this construction? Okay? In other words, the question is, I mean, he could have done it. Why did he? I mean, you're talking about building an ark. It was 120 years that he was building it. That's an awful lot of work. Why did he bother? So he says, so that the people of the generation of the flood should see him, busy with the ark for 120 years, and ask him, of what use is this to you? He would say to them, in the future the Holy One, blessed is he, is going to bring a flood upon the world. Thus, through the construction of the ark, they might repent. Okay? The question is, if a man is going to build in the desert for 120 years an ark, won't people think he's crazy? The answer is, I mean, they must have known him, that he was an intelligent person. It would be like, you know Einstein, and you spoke to him, and you know he's intelligent, and you see he's doing something absolutely crazy. So you go over and ask him, why are you doing this? You understand? You wouldn't expect to do something crazy, so we start a discussion. You see? So that was the same thing over here. I just want to make an observation. I just want to say that this is really a general principle in the way God operates. Whenever he punishes, he always sets into motion something. Sometimes it's a person, like in this case, doing something outrageous. And sometimes in the laws of nature, he interferes to give warning that if you read it correctly, you have an open mind and you read it correctly, you can get the warning of that God is not happy with this, and there is going to be some punishment. Okay? Like, for instance, by Egypt, there were 10 plagues before God actually destroyed them. So they could have backed off at any point. Okay? Now, the Chumash says that he made it out of gopher wood. And Rashi says, this is its name, that's the name of the wood, gopher. Why did God command Noah to make the ark from this type of wood? Because its name is derived from gophrus. Gophrus means sulfur. For it was decreed upon them to be wiped out by sulfur. Okay? In other words, the question is, they weren't wiped out by the sulfur, they were wiped out by the waters. The answer is that probably that the sulfur was in the water. You understand? Somehow the sulfur was there, and the sulfur was part of the destruction of these people at the time. Okay? That's how Rashi holds. And there's also a Gemara that seems to hold, and they get it from a totally different angle than the gopher wood. Okay? But anyway, that's what Rashi holds. So we want to understand. There are a few questions here. One is, whenever God punishes, it must be something within the nature that it shows that it's a consequence of the act which they did. So, I mean, they had to be destroyed, so one way they're destroyed by water, fine. But why sulfur? Why did they destroy by sulfur? Why would they be destroyed by sulfur? What was in sulfur that shows something about the sin that they did? And the second question is, by Sodom, It says openly that he brought down upon them sulfur and salt. Okay? So, rained down upon them, it says there. Now there it says openly, but over here it doesn't say openly sulfur. It's only through a deduction. I mean, if it was really sulfur, if sulfur was used according to Rashi, then why didn't the Pasuk tell us that it was sulfur in the water? Just like by Sodom and Amorah. In other words, it doesn't say in the Pasuk how the sulfur got there, by the flood, whether it was rained down as part of the water, or it came someplace from the ground. Well, we don't know. All we know is that they were wiped out, according to Rashi, by sulfur. Clarify the question. In other words, in the laws of nature, there could certain things that could not be, that are not evil, but they're harmful. So as a result of the harm, and even though I didn't do anything wrong, if I do something stupid, I could hurt myself. When God punishes, it's only because of some evil, and the punishment must show that it's directly related to the evil. Okay? So the question is, how is the sulfur directly related to the evil of the people? And two is, if sulfur was used in the wiping them out, then by Sodom it says openly that he rained down sulfur and salt. So why didn't he rain down here? Why does it say openly in the Pasuk, explicitly in the Pasuk, that he rained down sulfur, or sulfur came from the ground, the waters brought it out from the ground, whatever it was. Okay? These are the two questions that we have on Rashi. So Shira wants to say like this. Shira wants to say that the fact that the ship, that the ark was made out of gopher wood, so that represents the idea, and the whole purpose of the ark was to get them to question and to get them to open their minds to maybe to repent, and they didn't take this warning. So therefore the sulfur represents the idea that they didn't take the warning when they were warned by God. Okay? They didn't take the warning when they were warned by God. God gave them a situation where they could be warned, and they did not partake of that warning. So therefore, to show this aspect of their crime, so they were punished with the sulfur besides the water. Okay? Now, Rita has two questions on this. One is, first of all, they were punished for the Pasuk says openly they were punished for the crime. They were punished for the crime for the crime of violence and robbery. There was no justice there. And two is by Sodom they did the same thing, right? And they were punished by sulfur for their crime. So it seems like the sulfur over there seems to be for the very crime that they did. Okay? So their sulfur was for the crime that they did. So therefore, why over here is sulfur only for the warning? Sulfur should also be for the crime. In other words, again, Shira's answer. Shira's answer is that... the building of the ark for the 120 years was a means of warning them that they should take a lesson and they should be able to see the truth through this. In other words, by speaking to Noah, Noah would be able to answer all their questions and to prove to them that God was going to bring a flood. But they made it out of gopher's wood, right? And when they did not take the warning, so part of the punishment was to die by sulfur, which is the same, which is the name of the ark, right? The wood of the ark, right? So they were punished by the sulfur, which represents the idea, which represents that idea that they didn't take warning. Okay? In other words, the wood would not have protected them from the sulfur. That's why at the end of the pasuk it says it made it with pitch. if the tar protected them. You see, they had to have wood. You can't put tar, you can't make a boat out of tar. So they put the tar around the wood, which protected them. But the fact that the name of the wood that they chose was gopher, which comes from the same word as gopheris, which is sulfur. So therefore, Rashi says, that was therefore that we're saying that the reason for the sulfur was in relationship to the ark, and not to their crying. In other words, the reason why God chose gopher wood was because to show that they didn't accept that he was going to punish them with sulfur, which is comes from the same Hebrew word, because they did not accept the warning of the ark. Okay, alright, so the question is, it's a big difference from Sodom, where the actual punishment for the crime was with sulfur that actually could rain down upon them. Okay? And now, I'd like to make a distinction between the crimes of the two societies. Okay? In Sodom, if you remember correctly, Sodom was a place where any visitors came, any foreigner came, so they used to torture them. They had strange ways of torturing them. They would act as if we're inviting you, according to our sages. They would say, well, we're going to invite you to stay at an inn. They gave him a bed. It was too small, so his foot stuck out. So he says, look, we want you to feel comfortable, so we'll chop your feet off. Okay? Or some people, they gave a bed that was too big. So he said, okay, we want you to feel comfortable. It's too small, so we'll stretch you out so you could fit in the bed. Okay? They used to torture all foreigners that came to the land. Okay? Over there, they were related together. They worked as a unit because of evil. It was the evil that connected the society and kept them together. It was their philosophy of evil that they were connected, that they were a unit. They operated as a unit to destroy foreigners. In the lifestyle of the flood, they used to steal from each other in the very society, which was, there was no accord. Each one thought of himself, or a small group of people might work together to steal from the others. There was no thought of the society as a whole. It was totally it was like a dysfunctional family, right? You know what I mean? Like they couldn't operate together. They just cheated each other, killed each other, took from each other. You understand? And they couldn't operate together. While in Sodom, it was an evil based on a philosophy of life that they all adhered to and stuck to this philosophy and bound them together. Okay? In other words, the difference between the two societies is the society of the flood was self-destructive. Was it the nature of the society was that it was self-destructive. The society of Sodom was a society that worked coherently together, right? And they would have maintained, unless they corrupted themselves in the way they operated. But the way they were operating at this time, they worked as a unit together against everybody else, and that maintained and strengthened the society. Let's leave this distinction, and we'll come back to it. Okay? I want to explain why. I'd like to answer the question. The original question we said, why was it that it was open in, that it stated in the pasuk, openly in the verse, that they were destroyed by sulfur? And over here was left for an implication that Rashi works out. Over here, why didn't it say if they were destroyed by sulfur? Why didn't they do that? That we could answer. And that the answer to that question is because by Sodom, the sulfur was used for the destruction because of their crime. It had to relate to their crime. Over here, the destruction of the society, the sulfur, was not because of the crime. It was not because of the crime. The sulfur, in other words, their destruction for their crime, there had to be a total wipeout of the whole society, and there were changes in the nature of the society. There are many commentaries that go into the nature of the changes, what the changes were. First of all, before that, they lived the hundreds of years, and then after that, they only started living to, Abraham only lived like 180 years. You understand? Yaakov lived, I think, 147. Before that, they lived 800 years, 900 years. You see, so there was a change in the nature of the society. So God had to destroy them totally and wipe out the whole society, and that was the flood, to totally wipe out the society. And therefore, they didn't mention the sulfur because the sulfur was not there for the act of the crime, but it was there because they didn't repent. It was a side point that they didn't repent, so God added the sulfur there, you see. But in Sodom, the essential punishment for the society was the sulfur. How that fits in with their crime, we'll have to see when we get there. That's what I was trying to answer with that distinction, but the distinction does not seem to work out too well to explain why the sulfur over there. Okay? But whatever it is, we'll have to wait to find that answer when we get to Sodom. Then we'll look through the Rashi's there and see what Rashi has to say there, to see, or other commentaries, see what the crime was that sulfur fits in that society. So the distinction is a nice distinction, even though it doesn't work insofar as the answer is concerned. But however, we explained why in one place, and we don't understand why in Sodom the punishment deserves salt and sulfur, okay? So that we'll have to see when we get there, but we do know why it did not state it openly, because they were not punished for the crime by the flood. They were not punished with sulfur for the crime. For the crime, the whole world had to be inundated in water and totally wiped out everything, and the whole nature of all things at that time changed. There was a change in the nature of the next generation after Noah, okay, and so therefore it was only implied, not written openly, okay, because it was attached to the ark itself and not to the crime. The word gopher wood and the word sulfur, which is gophris, was attached to that. So that's what the purpose of the sulfur, the burning of the sulfur, and therefore it's not written openly, because it wasn't the payment for the crime. It was payment to show that when they were given a chance to repent, they didn't take that chance. And the question was, why did God use water? At this point, we don't know why he used the water to wipe them out. Okay, the next part of the verse says compartments, that he made it in compartments. So Rashi explains, there were several living areas, one for each species of domestic animal and beast. Okay, so the question is, why did each animal and beast have to have their own separate compartment? As you know, that one of the sins was that, and we discussed it last week, that they brought together different animals from different species, and even the animals were relating to different species, which was a corruption of the order of how God created the world. So it could be that the different compartments was to separate the different species, so there shouldn't be any relationship between the different species. Okay, so therefore it could be each one had a different compartment. Right, the next Rashi in the same verse says with pitch. Okay, and so first he says what the word in Aramaic is. Okay, fine. Then he says, regarding the Ark of Moses, because the waters were weak or tranquil, it was sufficient for Moses' Ark to be coated with mortar on the inside and tar on the outside. And the tar has a terrible odor. Okay? And furthermore means another answer. Moses' ark did not have tar on the inside, as did Noah's, so that the righteous one, Moshe, should not smell the foul odor of tar. But here, because of the force of the water, he tarred it inside and out. Okay? That's what Rashi says. Rashi is giving two answers. One answer is the distinction between the way Moshe's ark was made and the way Noah's ark was made. One answer was practical. He didn't need it on the inside because the waters were tranquil. So therefore, why should they put tar on the inside? Tar has a terrible odor. So they only put it on the outside. But by Noah's, they had no choice. Second answer has to do with Moshe himself, the Moshe's righteousness, that even if it would have been dangerous, God would have protected him, God would have performed a miracle for him, but he wouldn't put tar on the inside because Moshe was on a level, where even though he was a child at the time, but I guess he would be on a level, that his righteousness, that he doesn't deserve to have that foul odor, so God wouldn't let them put tar on the inside to protect Moshe from this foul odor. Okay? So we're saying that one answer is a practical answer, and one answer is a answer that is because of the level of Moshe. Okay? Now, according to the practical, I understand the difference between Moshe's ark and Noah's ark. Okay, but according to the second one, where God could have performed a miracle, so why did He perform a miracle for Noah? Why? What's the difference between Moshe and Noah? Why did Moshe deserve that he shouldn't have a foul smell, while Noah deserved that he should have could have a foul smell? So therefore, because God would not do a miracle for him, so he had to do that. Noah had to do that, which was practical. Therefore, he had to put pitch on the inside and the outside by Noah, because God would interfere. But by Moshe, where Moshe was on a higher level, so God would interfere. Okay. So the question is, why is it for one side that will interfere, for another side that will not interfere? In other words, the question is why Rashi doesn't say that there was a miracle in the second answer, okay? But the answer is, Rashi says that because of his righteousness, they didn't put he didn't want it to smell the foul odor of tar, right? So the thing is therefore, that answer is implying that according to practicality, Moshe should have had it, tar on the inside. But because of his righteousness, he did not have tar. So what do we do about the practicality? I mean, if it's practical and you don't do it, he's going to be harmed. The answer is that God would protect him. The answer is God would protect him. And the only way God could protect him is through a miracle. In other words, God would protect him against the practicality or the laws of nature. So God would protect him, and that's the only way he would do it, by performing a miracle. But yet he didn't perform that miracle for Noah. In other words, if God is performing such miracles for Noah, you understand, the whole ark and saving him, the whole thing, why can't he just add this one more miracle and save him from the smell of the tar?
Okay.
Hey, of course, Moshe, at the time that he was a baby, wasn't the Moshe at Mount Sinai. So the question is, are we dealing with prophecy or something else here? This I don't know. I don't know. But it's dealing that Moshe is on a higher level. Now, as a baby, he wasn't on a higher level. He couldn't do anything. He didn't make any decisions. So he can't be on any level. Okay? But the thing is, maybe it's based on the future. You understand exactly how Rashi works that out? I don't know. But the fact is, Rashi is saying that Moshe, the righteous, he should not have a tar on the inside, so he should have the smell of tar. The righteous is smell tar. The question is, again on Rashi. Rashi says, first he starts out with a practical distinction between Moshe and Noah. Then he makes a distinction between Moshe being righteous. Then he comes back to the practical, okay? So the thing is, That second idea of the practical could be where he says, because of the strength of the water, could be attached to both answers. If it's attached to the first answer, so it's very clear, because of the strength of the water, the power, the waves moving all along, so the practical answer, that worked out. The second thing is that both places, they need a tar on the inside. And more so by Noach, because of the high waves. Okay? But they both need it. But he's saying that still in all, God did not intervene on that area. In other words, practically Noach had that tar on the inside. The question is, why didn't God intervene on that? So the last part is saying, it's either returning to the first answer, or it's returning to the second answer. The first answer is just explaining the distinction of the practical. So returning to the second answer, it's just saying that he had to live in the practical because God would not intervene for him. Evidently, emotion was on a higher level, but I'd like to draw a distinction in the nature of the miracle itself. In other words, God did perform miracles for Noah. Well, with the ark, he put him in an ark. He had to build the ark, but the ark was the whole idea. I mean, besides the building of the ark, in other words, what Shira wants to say, that there was no miracle by the ark. Everything was worked out very practically, and that there was no miracle there at all. So God didn't perform any miracle. He only told them about the flood, and he told them the specifications of how to build the ark. Okay, but however, once he built the ark, then it seems like, from the facts that we have until now, that there would be not a miracle in Noah. So. So what is that? Do we still have a question? I don't know if the ark was a miracle or not. I don't know. I mean, at this point, it seems like you're right that it was not a miracle. If it was a miracle, then I just want to say like this. The difference between Moshe and Noach is Noach deserved to be saved, but nothing positive. There's two levels of righteousness. There's one level of righteousness where God will protect you, but he won't give you comforts of life. There's another level where God not only would protect you, but he would give you the comforts of life. You see? That would be that distinction. But according to the thing that it was practical, one deserved the miracle for the comforts of life, but Noah didn't even deserve a miracle. He only deserved to be saved in a very practical way. So that's even a further step away. In other words, I'm not sure if it was a miracle, then the distinction between Noach and Moshe is a closer distinction. If it was not a miracle, then it's even a further distinction between the two, the levels of the two. Okay, that is the idea. Verse 15 says that there was a light made for the ark. Rashi has two opinions of what that light is. One person says it was a window, and one says it was a precious stone which provided light for them. Okay? So the question is, why is there a disagreement over this? What are they arguing about? What is the premise of their argument? What are the issues that they're arguing about? In other words, what's the difference whether it's a window or a precious stone? They had light. I mean, why is there a disagreement? What are the issues? In Bereshis, it's in chapter 19, verse 17, it's talking about where the two angels came to Lot and told them to run away from Sodom. And he said, run for your life, and don't turn back behind you. Okay? Don't turn behind you. So we went back to, we went forward to Bereshis, that's chapter 19, verse 17. It was when Lot, the two angels were taking Lot to save them from Sodom. And the angel said you should run for your life and don't turn back. So Rashi says you should not look behind you. You did evil along with them. And it is only through the merit of Abraham that you are being saved. You do not deserve to see their punishment while you are being saved. Okay? So the question is what's wrong if a person doesn't deserve, in other words, if a person deserves to be saved, so then if he wants, he could look at their destruction or not. If a person doesn't want, if a person identifies with them, they did the evil and they related to them, so the question is, why shouldn't they look? You understand? That is the question. There are two ways of looking at people that are destroyed. One is, one side is also two possibilities. One is you see the justice, why it's being done, or you might have compassion for them. You understand? Either you see the reason why they are, or you have a certain compassion. But there is another way of looking at that, and that is that if I'm being saved, then I must, and they're being destroyed, then I must be better than them. You see, people look at it. In other words, the emotions when something bad happens to other people, naturally they evaluate themselves as being better. I think that's the draw a lot for soaps and people listen to soaps or gossip. Because when they hear evil about or terrible things about others, so they evaluate themselves. One of the benefits, I mean, there are many benefits in listening to gossip, but the following selves, but one of the benefits is that you are better than them when you hear all their faults and all the things that happened to them. So the thing is that if you are a person that's part of evil and you deserve to die, so it means you have the wrong value system, and you will look at them. You will look at them in a like I'm better than them. That is incorrect. Okay. So I want to say the same thing by Noah. By Noah, the window. You see, not only would you get light in, but you could also look out. You see. Now the question is, Noah, we learned before that Noah was a righteous man, but simultaneously he had a conflict. In fact, we said one of the reasons of building the ark was to prevent him from not having to go among the evil people. So that because he could not do what Abraham did. If he went among them, he would fail. So in one way, he had a desire to be like them, but he knew that it was wrong, so he stayed away. He protected himself. You understand? It wasn't a natural thing. So the question is that in such a situation, is such a person is allowed to look or not allowed to look? It's a question of a borderline case like by Noah, where he is, in one part of him, he knows the truth, and he knows the system of justice. But emotionally, there's still an emotion that goes the other way. So which way he's going to look at it, it's a difference of opinion of how that person is going to look at it. Only God can know for sure, but sages say that there are two possibilities. There's a borderline case where they might look at it as a system, looking at God's justice, seeing God's justice, or they might look at it as that I'm better than them because, see, they're failing and they're dying and I'm saved. If they look at it the second way, that's a wrong message that they're getting. So that is the difference of opinion. One says the light came from a window, meaning that they did have the right to look out. According to the second interpretation, there was a bright light, you see. God held that they would have the wrong view of what they would see. It would give them the wrong message that they're better.
which is not true, and so therefore, and which is a harmful view of life. So in other words, success, you can't go by success, because success is out of your hands. People feel somehow they're better when they have success, so it's a bad view of life. So protect them from this view. So they used a precious stone to give them light so they couldn't see out. Then the verse continues, and to a cubit, it was completed with a cubit from above. The cubit is an amma. An amma is 2 feet. Okay, so Rashi says its cover or roof slopes upward until it narrows at the top, so that the rainwater should flow downward on both sides, like a house. Bill had the roof of the house slanty, so the water flows down and it doesn't hold it down, so it would bring down the boat. Okay? Now, this is a practical idea, and I'm mentioning the practical things also, because we're going to have a problem later with the practical. Okay? Anyway, and then on its side, in other words, you should put the door on its side. This is also practical, so that the rain should not fall into it, because the door might not be, there might be a little crack there, a little something, so the rain wouldn't hit it, and it'll be above water level, so it wouldn't come in from the water level, because the doorway would be above water level, and it wouldn't come in from the rain through the top, so therefore they put it on the side. That was also a practical thing. And then they had 3 floors, one above the other, and Rashi explains why they needed 3 floors. The upper floor was for the family, okay, for the humans. The middle floor was for the different animals, and the lowest floor was for the refuse. So again, it's a practical thing. They have to have 3 floors because they're going to have refuse. So they had to have a place to throw it, so they put it on the bottom floor, and the animals were on the second, and the humans were on the top. Okay? That takes care of verse 16. Verse 17 says, "And I will bring a flood of water on the earth to destroy all flesh, that there is a living a life in it from under the heavens. Everything that is in the earth will be removed, will die or expire." The beginning says, "So, and as for me, behold, I'm about to bring a flood." Says, so Rashi says, "Behold, I am ready to agree with those who pushed me or stirred me or advised me, and have already said before me, what is man that you should mention him?" It seems to mean that he wanted to get rid of everybody, all man, all mankind. You know what I mean? And only, so I thought of that, that God is saying, of getting rid of all of mankind. Okay? So the question is, why did God want to get rid of all mankind? Now, Rashi quotes a pasuk from the Psalms, and I'd like to read that from the Psalms. It's chapter 8, starting with verse 4. It says, King David says, "When I behold your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have set in place," then there's a parenthesis. It doesn't actually say this, but then I think, "What is man that you should remember him, and the son of mortal that you should be mindful of him?" Which means that man should not exist. Why should man exist? Okay? Now, the question is, why shouldn't God want man to exist, or why shouldn't man exist? Okay? Now, according to the, if you follow the sequence of the verse 4, where it talks about the heavens and the work of your finger, the moon and the stars, those are different areas of the laws of nature, system of nature. And when I think of the laws of nature, I think of man, that man should not have been created. Okay, why did you create man? What is wrong with man that he created him? Man, to a certain extent, is not totally in line with the laws of nature. In fact, there's a medrash that says that the angels said this, that the angel says that you should create man. What are angels? Angels are laws of nature. Angels are the laws of nature. But man seems to be somehow out of the laws of nature. How is that? How is he out of the laws of nature? Because man has free will. Now, how does free will come about? God created two systems in the human being. One is the mind, which is in line with reality. And it's a system. The mind works in a certain way that it can perceive reality and truth. But however, God also created in human being a system called psychology, or emotions, or the psyche of the human being. And that was a system created so that man should see life incorrectly. Understand? So therefore, because man could see life incorrectly, that is not in line with everything else in the world. Everything else in the world is totally in line to live, to do the correct thing and to do exactly what is in line with nature. Only the human being is somehow different. You see? And because he has free will, because God wanted a being to have free will, so therefore man is part of him, is out of the laws of nature, and therefore according to that he should not be created. And because of that part of him, he did terrible things. That's why he deserved to get the flood. You see? So on one hand, according to the system of nature, there's a part of man that doesn't belong in nature. You see? And that is the psyche. But however, because God wants free will, so therefore God saved man to keep him alive. So that's what the verse is saying. And it says, I'm going to listen to those. Those are the laws of nature. That's the angels. The sages say it's the angels, which means the laws of nature that they moved me to say, what is man that you should mention? And in other words, because man doesn't fit in, so he has a part of him that doesn't fit into the laws of nature. In fact, it was created a system to make decisions outside the laws of nature. And so, therefore, he says, really, that idea came in mind now, that maybe I should destroy all of the human race. But I'm just adding here that I know that God wanted being to have free will, so therefore we still exist today. Verse 18 says, and I will establish my agreement with you, and you will come into the ark, you and your sons and your daughter and your wife, you and the wives of your sons with you. Okay? So he says, I will establish my agreement with you, right? So the question is, why do you need an agreement? Why does there need an agreement? What is the agreement about? What is God going to... In other words, an agreement means that you do this and I'll do that, right? What is God going to do for him? So for everything he did on his own, right? It says, because Noah needed an agreement or a covenant regarding the fruits he took with him on the ark, that they should not rot and become moldy. Because it would not have lasted. They didn't have refrigeration. It would not have lasted for 40 days. So God had to cause a miracle there. So there was one part. And the second is so that the wicked of the generation should not kill him. In other words, when they would see because he's telling them that their lifestyle is wrong, and while he's building the ark, he's saying this is going to come, and he's in their face about that they're doing wrong and God is going to destroy them. You see? So God had to protect them. So therefore, God protected them in these two ways, so therefore he needed a covenant. Okay? Right, so that was the covenant. But you see, again, only God helps you only insofar as you can't do it for yourself. In other words, the first half was the laws of nature. The second half was the human being, the psyche of the human being. So therefore, insofar as you can help yourself, protect yourself against these two things, so therefore God will have to protect you. And then the Rashi says, two from all. In other words, in verse 19 it says, and from all the living things, from every species, one male and one female, because that was practical already, right? And to keep, okay, and then Rashi says it couldn't be the ones that were mauled that were able to live. Okay. Of course, that, in other words, it had to be a healthy one. And it had to be two healthy, male and female, which is all practical. Now, there were certain animals that were allowed in, and there were certain animals that were not allowed in. Those that had relations with their own species, and those that didn't corrupt their ways to have relationships with other animals, so they came on their own without Noah gathering them. And all any animal which the ark would receive, Noah brought into the ark's living area. In other words, this was also a miracle, that because Noah couldn't tell, had no way of knowing what type of lifestyle the animal had before they came to the ark. So he could, to gather all the animals that were necessary, that would be impossible. So they came to the ark. And to which ones came, the ark would somehow let certain ones in, certain animals in and not others, based on their previous lifestyle. Okay? So here's where, so in other words, when God told Noah about the ark, he told him what his obligations are. And starting with verse 18, start saying what God would do for them. And the last verse says, and Noah did it says, and Noah did everything that God commanded him. That's what he did. He did exactly what God commanded him. And he said, and Rashi says, this refers to the construction of the ark. Okay? Now, my question is, frankly, all of the construction of the ark was practical, what Noah had to do. What do you mean he listened to everything that God said? I mean, he had to do that. Not even to bat an ark, it's a practical thing. You look at all the things that Rashi said about different things. If we go back over them, you will see that they were all practical and necessary, except a few areas. But otherwise, they were practical and necessary. So why does it have to say that he listened to God? Why didn't it just say that he did that which was practical? Repeat of the question. The question is that God commanded Noah exactly how to build the ark. Okay? And then a lot of the things in the building of the ark was very practical. Like, for instance, the slopes, that it sloped up. Okay, well, so the rain should fall off it, and it shouldn't sink. That they had a window or a precious stone was practical, so that they could see what they're doing. You understand? They had to see what they're doing. They couldn't make fires in the ark when moving around. They couldn't make fires, so it was practical. They had to have something to see by. So a lot of the building of the ark was how to see. I mean, practical. And yet it says that Noah did everything exactly what God said. But it could have said Noah did everything which was necessary based on practicality. Why did it say that he built it based on what God said? The answer is that there are two ways of relating to God. One is the ideas. Ideas, knowledge of God, like the 13 basic principles of God, the Animamin, basic principles of faith. I'm sorry, the Animamin. So that's knowledge of God, which you have to have. Without which, I mean, you can't relate to God. You have to know who God is. So you have to have knowledge of God. But then there's another part, which is the commandments. And the commandments are that I obey God. Okay? Now, it makes no difference whether I understand the reasons for the commandments or I don't understand the reasons for the commandments. I must obey God. And all I must know one thing, that all the commandments are a benefit to me. Okay? But I do it because I obey God. Okay? Now, there is a responsibility, to the best of your ability, to understand the reasons behind the laws. Okay? Which Rashi tells us, in the case of Noah, all the reasons behind the laws. All the laws that we have are practical and beneficial. It's a matter of knowing how it benefits us. Some of them we can know, some of them we can't know. Okay? But however, when we relate to the laws, we must relate because God commanded us. So what is the benefit of knowing the reason, since I'm going to do the laws anyway? I think the reason is, of course, when you see the reason, you see two things. One is you see how to live your life, where, in other words, like in this case, God is very practical. God is telling you to build an ark to the best of your ability that a human being could do, which is all practical, right? And then you could rely on God. Only after you've done everything which you can, then you could rely on God, you see? So I learned that from knowing the reasons. And two, also when I learned the reasons, I see God's wisdom, which brings me closer to God. But I relate to the laws, even if they're practical, well, even if they're beneficial, I relate to it because God commanded me. It's a relationship between me and God that I obey God. That's halacha. And you'll notice many times that before God performed the miracle, he always gave certain laws. Like, for instance, in Jericho, when God, when we walked around the thing seven times, God told Joshua, exactly what to do, how many times to walk around, what to do after you walked around, how many days. All these things was a command. Yet the commentaries say the psychological effect that all the things that the whole nation was supposed to walk around quietly. Now, can you imagine in the superstitious country, which was Jericho? We walked around quietly. We don't say a word, like brings up your own emotional fears of the supernatural. And it undermines their ability to fight. So God had a psychological reason, according to the Ralbag, Gershonides, that he says this is the reason. But the fact is, if you look at it, it was a set of laws, you see. So also before whenever there's going to be a miracle, usually along with the miracle is a certain set of laws that are obligated to obey God, you see. And hereby Noah also, it is the laws that Noah must keep the laws. So he did it because God commanded, even though God commanded that which is practical, you see. But he did it because God commanded. And he did everything exactly the way God said he should. He listened to the words of God, even though he knew the reason, but he listened to the words of God and did it exactly how God told him to do it. I can know the reasons behind it, but the specifics must be done according to the way God tells me.